The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Today on the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. Joe Biden is sworn in as President of the United States.
So help me God.
We'll look at the growing threat of China.
They may be abetting genocide, and that is fundamentally unacceptable.
Republicans brace for a battle.
Now Democrats have much higher expectations, and they're probably going to try to push through a lot of stuff that's going to be a lot more controversial.
Immigration is a hot issue once again.
Do you really think that they would want a pathway to citizenship for 22 million illegal aliens if two out of three would vote Republican? We wouldn't be having this conversation.
And there is a caravan of immigrants hoping to take advantage.
Biden, he's going to help all of us. He's given us 100 days to get to the U.S.
I'm Hugh Hewitt. Great to be with you. Catch my program each weekday morning live, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern Time and on demand 24/7. Learn more at HughHewitt.com and follow me on Twitter at Hugh Hewitt. Follow this program as well at Town Hall Review. The United States has a new president.
Unity. Unity. In another January, on New Year's Day in 1863, Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation. When he put pen to paper, the president said, and I quote, "If my name ever goes down into history, it'll be for this act, and my whole soul is in it." My whole soul is in it. Today, on this January day, my whole soul is in this, bringing America together, uniting our people, uniting our nation. And I ask every American to join me in this cause.
Joe Biden was sworn in Wednesday, January 20th, as the 46th president of the United States.
We must end this uncivil war that pits red against blue, rural versus urban, conservative versus liberal. We can do this if we open our souls instead of hardening our hearts, if we show a little tolerance and humility, and if we're willing to stand in the other person's shoes, as my mom would say, just for a moment, stand in their shoes.
Very quickly, Biden will face international challenges, none as daunting as the trouble coming from the People's Republic of China. I discussed this issue with Wisconsin Congressman Mike Gallagher. Your friend and mine, Mike Pompeo, declared genocide in China. Now, that passed with a lot of people paying a lot of attention, a lot of people not even noting it. What do you think is the importance of that, Congressman?
Well, it's significant for a number of reasons, and I think it's a long overdue step, one that I hope other countries follow. Back in August, the Biden campaign actually released a statement calling the CCP's actions in Xinjiang genocide, and I was glad to see that the incoming Secretary of State nominee, Tony Blinken, endorsed the genocide determination during his nomination hearing. So, point one would be that this is a hopeful sign that there's bipartisan support behind this. And I stand ready to work with anyone that is committed to deterring the Chinese Communist Party. The second reason I think it's very significant, Hugh, is that it really does send a message to Wall Street and to private industry and a lot of big multinational companies that might have supply chains and sources of labor that lead back to Xinjiang, China. And I think the message we need to send from the Hill, particularly at a time when a lot of people in the financial industry are investing heavily in so-called ESG investing, the idea you want, you know, to invest in things that are environmentally friendly, sustainable. We want the G actually to come to stand for genocide. And for any company that has a supply chain that leads back to China, they need to be clear out about the fact that they may be abetting genocide, and that is fundamentally unacceptable.
Now, Congressman, There have been efforts to limit the consequences of the genocide determination to people whose product lines only run to Xinjiang province. And I say to myself, would that have been the case if there were no concentration camps in Bavaria, that you could have dealt with Germany if it was a Bavarian factory as opposed to a factory that was near a different concentration death camp? Why are we making that distinction when it comes to the People's Republic of China? The entire economy is one economy. It's an authoritarian economy.
Well, I think it's going to become increasingly difficult to make that distinction. If I had to hazard a guess why, it's because our economy is so thoroughly intertwined with that of China's that a complete and immediate decoupling would be painful for a lot of American businesses. I think it's going to take the work of a decade to selectively decouple our supply chain and key parts of our economy from China. I will, however, say I think our biggest lesson learned from the pandemic is that there are very real dangers to being dependent on China for the manufacturing of basic goods. If for no other reason, you can't trust the Chinese Communist Party. And look no further than the fact that, you know, a year into this, we are still struggling to get access to the laboratories in China where this virus may have emerged. China is denying the WHO team access they need to go to their level four biosafety lab, which just happens to be located in Wuhan, where the outbreak of this virus occurred. And without getting that, you know, clear assessment of what happened at the outbreak of this pandemic, we are going to be in a bad position to prevent future pandemics. And so the regime is growing more emboldened, even a year after it unleashed a devastating virus upon the world, not less emboldened. And I fear that we're going to see more of that over the next 4 years. And all businesses are going to have to make some very, very tough choices if they have supply chains that go back to Beijing.
Now, Congressman, there's a Washington Post story that China turbocharges bid to discredit Western vaccine spread virus conspiracy theories, the most recent one being that hot buns brought the new virus in from outside. Ought Twitter and Facebook to be shutting this down? I believe this is actually inimical to the world to allow this to go on. Ought Facebook and Twitter to shut down this propaganda?
Well, in the midst of the pandemic in March, when Facebook and Twitter were allowing CCP apparatchiks to spread earlier conspiracy theories such that the United States Army was responsible for the outbreak of the virus, I wrote a letter to @Jack telling him that at a minimum, he should kick Chinese officials off his platform. And I think the simple standard should be if a foreign government does not allow their own citizens access to the platform, then its government officials should not have access to the platform in order to spread dangerous propaganda and dangerous conspiracy theories. And I think particularly at a time when these platforms are shutting down the president of the United States, the American people see an obvious double standard, one that's deeply dangerous and inimical to Western values and really harms the United States in the immediate and harms American values over the long term. So I would really urge @Jack and all these other tech bros to reconsider their policies.
For the entire conversation with Congressman Gallagher, go to townhallreview.com. With President Biden comes a narrow Democrat-controlled House of Representatives and a split United States Senate, where Vice President Kamala Harris will act as a tiebreaker. The challenges for the Republican Party will be great over these next 2 years. While Biden promised unity in his inaugural address, he has also signaled upcoming legislative moves that have conservatives on high alert. I spoke with National Review's Jim Garrity on The Hugh Hewitt Show. The first thing he's asked to get done is immigration reform. Now, you remember 2006 and you remember 2013. I'm sure we talked about both of those efforts. What are the odds on immigration reform getting through a 50-50 Senate and the narrowest House in my lifetime?
Not great. And you know, what's interesting, what reminds me of Hugh, is Barack Obama stepped into the Oval Office in 2009. And we just had the Wall Street meltdown, the beginning of the Great Recession. Things were bad. Didn't have a pandemic going on like right now. But, you know, this is a crisis. And the president, you know, they did their first stimulus, couldn't get Republicans to buy into it. The infamous I-1 statement to congressional Republicans. But there was a question of what do you do after that? And he had a choice of health care or infrastructure. And, you know, so, you know, whether or not we like it, Republicans like spending money on roads and bridges and stuff like that, too. There could have been some bipartisan buy-in because everybody likes spending money. Stuff like Obamacare and the individual mandate, that was always going to be a big partisan stink bomb that you were never going to get Republican buy-in on. And the Obama team went with the more controversial of the choice. And, you know, in part because I'm sure they saw an opportunity with the, you know, current split in the House and the Senate then that they weren't going to get again. Here is Biden again. He's run on uniting the country. This is about the soul of America. We need to not see each other. You know, he campaigns as Abraham Lincoln. And then he gets in there, and the first thing, we got to get amnesty. We got to get a pass to citizenship. We got to get that thing which we, you know, which is not centrist, which is not uniting, which is not bringing people together. Some of these cabinet appointments are pretty awful after what seemed like a pretty good start. You know, we're in for more partisan slugfests, and it's in part because of the, you know, like, Biden could have had a different path here, but he's decided to go with this.
What's interesting to me, Jim, is there is a false positive of Democratic rebound in the Senate elections in Georgia, mm-hmm. obscuring the fact that the Republican down ticket actually showed extraordinary strength in November, winning in the state legislatures, winning in the House, winning in the Senate, actually better than they thought they were going to do, even with the two Georgia seats gone. And so this false positive of the craziness in Georgia, I talked to Doug Collins, who confirmed that, in fact, President Trump lost Georgia this morning. And Doug Collins is the conservative likely to challenge Raphael Warnock. I think Democrats are making a huge mistake. They're forgetting redistricting is coming, and that House majority is already an endangered species.
Yeah, right after Election Day, when, you know, one of the observations people were taking away from it is, hey, Republicans didn't do that bad down ticket, you know, and up until, you know, the way Georgia shook out, it looked like they were going to keep the Senate. And you were thinking, okay, maybe the Biden administration Democrats won't get wiped out in the midterms, because there's been this history, particularly in 2010, you could even argue in 2006, you know, a new president comes into office, 2018, new president comes into office, they have congressional majorities, and they pass everything they can pass, because they don't know if they'll have the opportunity after the midterms, and it turns into a self-fulfilling prophecy. The president's part, the base of the president's party starts to get, you know, tune out, get lackadaisical, not as involved in politics. The opposition party's outraged, grassroots are outraged, and, I can't believe he's doing this, you know, and it turns into this self-fulfilling prophecy. If it was narrowly divided and Joe Biden had said, look, I can't pass it, Mitch McConnell runs the Senate, maybe Biden wouldn't go too far, and maybe you wouldn't see that kind of backlash effect we've seen in midterm elections for the past, you know, probably 16 years or so. 2002 was the last time a president's party didn't get mauled in the midterms. Well, here we are, and now Democrats have much higher expectations, and they're probably going to try to push through a lot of stuff that's going to be a lot more controversial. Probably going to push Joe Biden in a direction he really didn't necessarily want to go in.
Nancy Pelosi has two more years to make a mark, so she wants to go left. But Chuck Schumer wants to stay the majority leader, and they've got a lot of people on the bubble. Do you think the rules will protect the filibuster, the legislative filibuster?
I think so. Repealing the filibuster when it's a 50-50 split, like that's basically saying, well, we've worked our way to a tie, and Kamala Harris is around to break the ties. Ergo, we should have total power.
A fascinating interview with a member of the slow-moving U.S.-bound caravan has many concerned.
Biden, he's going to help all of us. He's given us 100 days to get to the U.S.
The Town Hall Review returns in a moment. This COVID-19 crisis has been straining the limits of our constitutional system. Over the next few years, we'll see a generation of new and grounded policy leaders emerge. They'll be prepared at Pepperdine's Graduate School of Public Policy. Learn more about the deadline for application at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. We all hope and pray for President Joe Biden and that his administration might be blessed with wisdom. The rhetoric of the campaign is over. The transition, as difficult as it was, is done. We will soon see if the president is true to his word on unity and becoming a president for all people, not just for those who voted for him. His cabinet nominees gave us a clue as to the direction of his administration. Some of those moves have been encouraging, others troubling. But he also has promised an agenda for his first 100 days. That is what is of particular concern to conservatives. Salem host Mike Gallagher examines those promises.
An analysis of Biden's first 100 days agenda. For example, Biden has promised a whole different policy when it comes to illegal immigration. So anybody who voted to have a secure border is watching this pretty closely. Biden has promised legislation outlining broad immigration changes, including a path to citizenship for the 11 million immigrants in the U.S. who lack permanent status. A transition official said the plan will include an 8-year path to citizenship, confirming details first reported in the Washington Post. In fact, Biden made promises that from his first day in office, there'd be no more deportations, which was, I don't know if that's rhetorical or if that's an actual promise. The Wall Street Journal's analysis, which we'll post at MikeOnline.com, about Biden's first 100 days agenda, is, you know, going to include executive orders that will undo a lot of the Trump accomplishments, including the way we look at illegals and migrants entering the country, pouring into the country. In fact, this is courtesy of CNN, actually. There's thousands of migrants in a caravan headed for the United States through Guatemala. And one of the migrants was asked, why are you headed towards the United States?
What I want for my people, I just want patience and peace that we can get to the U.S. because they're having a new president, versus Biden. He's going to help all of us. He's given us 100 days to get to the U.S. and give us legal mental paper so we can get a better life for our kids and family.
Wow. There's where we are. Look at Simon & Schuster canceled Josh Hawley's book because he supposedly was part of the insurrection because he wanted a debate about the certification of votes. That's it. You're done. Now, Regnery stepped in, and I guarantee you Josh Hawley's going to sell a lot of books. But the idea is, I mean, it's pretty shocking to watch this effort. I was reading an article that John Daniel Davidson wrote. He's the political editor of The Federalist. And this appeared in the New York Post today. The caravan is coming, Joe. I want you to hear this, because this is what we face now as a country. As Joe Biden gets inaugurated in Washington, D.C., in a locked-down capital with over 25,000 troops protecting the District of Columbia. Here's what John David Danielson pointed out. Even before Biden is sworn in, his administration is facing an immigration crisis entirely of the Democrats' making. After repeatedly promising to reverse the Trump administration's strict immigration and border policies, the incoming Biden administration suddenly realizes there are consequences. Biden's message to would-be migrants, reports NBC News, is this: don't come, at least not yet. A senior Biden administration transition official is quoted as saying that migrants need to understand they're not going to be able to come into the United States immediately. But the migrants aren't waiting. Inspired by hopes of getting into the United States under a more lenient Biden administration, a caravan of some 8,000 Hondurans are currently making their way toward the southwest border. On Friday, advance elements of the caravan clashed with Guatemalan soldiers at the border of the two countries, with two separate groups of more than 3,000 people forcing their way into Guatemala. The caravan could reach the U.S.-Mexico border in a matter of weeks. The news should come as no surprise to anyone who has paid attention to Biden's campaign rhetoric over the past year. When you promise to end on day one a Trump program that requires Central American asylum seekers to wait in Mexico while their cases are being adjudicated, effectively endorsing a return to the catch-and-release policies of the past, it's entirely reasonable for thousands of Hondurans to conclude that if they can get into the U.S. after Biden is sworn in, they can stay. As John David Daniel Davidson writes, in recent weeks, the incoming Biden administration has been scrambling to temper its messaging about the border in hopes of forestalling a crisis. In late December, Biden said he would roll back Trump's immigration policies at a slower pace than he initially promised to avoid having 2 million people on our border. It will probably take 6 months, he said, to create a new system to produce tens of thousands of asylum seekers. And his team is, quote, setting up the guardrails, unquote, to avoid a surge of illegal immigration this spring.
Immigration legislation could have a profound impact on the United States. There are millions of people inside the states who are not here with permission, living and working in the country, many of them making a positive and constructive contribution to their community. Some believe Democrats want to give everyone here without permission fast tracks to full citizenship for one reason, to vote in more Democrats. Here's Salem host Larry Elder.
Now, he is going to ask Congress on the first day to grant legal status to, quote, 11 million illegal aliens, close quote. Yahoo News is reporting this, and a pathway to citizenship on the first day. That, of course, is a 180 from President Trump. Now, we're looking at an election that, according to a pundit on MSNBC, 40,000 votes one way or the other would have changed the outcome of this election in just three states. And now we're going to add something like 11 million, and that number is probably half the actual number. I'll talk about that in just a second. 11 million people will get legal status, and of course then the pathway to citizenship. And remember that union leader said, if we can get two out of three new voters to vote for us, we're going to have a progressive governing agenda for the long haul. Do you really think that they would want a pathway to citizenship for 22 million illegal aliens if two out of three would vote Republican? We wouldn't be having this conversation, just like we wouldn't be talking about making Washington, D.C. a state if it weren't for the fact that this city is overwhelmingly left-wing and it will produce two more Democrat senators. We wouldn't be having a discussion about making Puerto Rico a state if that weren't the same situation. We wouldn't be talking about giving free college tuition if it weren't for the fact that students who go to college more likely come out left-wing than they went in. Yale study finds twice as many undocumented immigrants as previous estimates. New study using mathematical modeling on a range of demographic and immigration operations data suggests that the actual undocumented immigrant population may be more than 22 million.
Coming up, progressives want to punish those who challenge the election results.
Did they forget what they said after the election of 2016?
The Town Hall Review returns in a moment. This COVID-19 crisis has been straining the limits of our constitutional system. Over the next few years, we'll see a generation of new and grounded policy leaders emerge. They'll be prepared at Pepperdine's Graduate School of Public Policy. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Several Republicans challenged the certification of election results on January 6th. Included among them were Senator Ted Cruz of Texas and Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri. For this, progressives want them punished. Already, publisher Simon & Schuster chose to renege on their plans to release a book by Senator Josh Hawley. Regnery has stepped in and will publish that book. More on that a bit later. What's most interesting about this display is a little-noted fact that several Democrats did the same thing, object to the certification of the Electoral College, just 4 years ago. They also did it in 2004. Here is Salem host Mike Gallagher.
Explain to me how there wasn't any pushback against the full-throated, concerted effort to change the electoral votes in 2016. Do they think we forgot this? When they insist that Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz need to be canceled because they had the temerity to stand up and say, we want an audit of this election, we want to challenge the veracity of the 2020 election. Do they forget or hope we forget what they said after the election of 2016?
Republican members of the Electoral College, this message is for you. As you know, our founding fathers built the Electoral College to safeguard the American people from the dangers of a demagogue and to ensure that the presidency only goes to someone who is, to an eminent degree, endowed with the requisite qualifications.
An eminent degree. Someone who is highly qualified for the job.
The Electoral College was created specifically to prevent an unfit candidate from becoming president.
There are 538 members of the Electoral College. You
and just 36 other conscientious Republican electors can make a difference.
By voting your conscience on December 19th.
And thereby shaping the future of our nation.
I'm not asking you to vote for Hillary Clinton.
I'm not asking you to vote for Hillary Clinton.
I'm not asking you to vote for Hillary Clinton.
As you know, the Constitution gives electors the right to vote for any eligible person.
Any eligible person, no matter which party they belong to.
But it should certainly be someone you consider especially competent.
Especially competent to serve as President of the United States of America.
By voting your conscience, you and other brave Republican electors can give the House of Representatives the option to select a qualified candidate for the presidency.
I stand with you.
I stand with you.
I stand with you.
I stand with you in support and solidarity with conservatives, independents, and liberals.
And all citizens of the United States.
The American people trust that your voice speaks for us all.
And that you will make yourself heard through the constitutional responsibility granted to you by Alexander Hamilton himself.
What is evident is that Donald Trump lacks more than the qualifications to be president.
He lacks the necessary stability.
And clearly the respect for the Constitution of our great nation.
You have position,
the authority,
and the opportunity to go down in the books as an American hero.
Who changed the course of history.
And you have my respect.
You have my respect.
You have my respect.
For your patriotism
and service to the American people. Unite for America.
To anybody who thinks that Donald Trump should be convicted, to anyone who thinks that Josh Hawley, Ted Cruz, or any Republican who pushed back against the election of 2020, to anybody who's glad that there is this tidal wave of opposition, to anybody who stood up and dared question the integrity of the 2020 election by questioning whether the elector votes could go from Biden to Trump, to anybody, will you call me and explain what you just heard and defend it? Will you tell me why those actors aren't guilty of sedition? They were trying to influence the electors after the general election by convincing them to change their vote away from Donald Trump, pretending they're not asking you to vote for Hillary. Well, there were only two on the ballot. Who would they have you vote for if not Donald Trump? But those are some of the most powerful Hollywood heavyweights we have. Martin Sheen, James Cromwell, many others. You go ahead and defend that. You go ahead and explain to me that we're supposed to pretend that Nancy Pelosi called the 2016 election hijacked. You go ahead and tell me let me know how we're going to pretend to forget all the pushback the Democrats gave to the outcome of the 2016 election, calling the election illegitimate, calling the election rigged, calling the election hijacked, calling the election corrupted by the Russians, calling the election not real. You go ahead and defend that and then get all righteously indignant about 2020, okay?
Coming up.
What happened to Senator Hawley shows that there is this blacklisting going on.
Salem steps in where Simon and Schuster bail. When the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment. Our program is coming today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. It's America's most unique graduate leadership programs offered on Pepperdine's breathtaking campus in Malibu, California. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. As mentioned in the last segment, publisher Simon & Schuster backed out of a deal to publish a book by Senator Josh Hawley. You can disagree with Hawley and his response to the election. In fact, I did. But Hawley's book has nothing to do with the election. It's about the threat of big tech. Simon & Schuster's move was purely political. An interesting twist, Salem Media, which syndicates my radio show, also publishes books under the imprint of Regnery Publishing. And Regnery Publishing was more than happy to pick up the Holly book titled The Tyranny of Big Tech. Thomas Spence, president of Regnery, explained his decision in a recent Wall Street Journal op-ed. He was on with Chris Stegall on AM 990, The Answer in Philadelphia.
Your editorial seems to reflect that. It's not really about endorsing anything one way or the other, by the way. It's just about allowing voices to be heard. Would you agree?
Yes. Regnery is a conservative book publisher. So we're probably not going to be, you know, looking for this, for example, Dr. Levine's memoir at the end of the... You know. However, in principle, we're open to publishing something by pretty much anyone. I mean, obviously there are limits, but what happened to Senator Hawley shows that there is this kind of blacklisting going on that has it's something that's very tempted for people to do. If I don't like somebody, I want to shut him up. That's pretty natural. But we used to have a set of professional ethics in publishing and devotion to something a little bit higher. And the notion that because somebody has been in, has affiliations or whatever and preferences that I strongly object to, that he should have no voice on any matter, that's a very dangerous place to go, and we're headed down that path pretty quickly, I think.
I started getting calls from reporters, in effect, daring me not to join the blacklisters, and from publishers, editors, and agents who wondered when and how the mob would come for them. Is that true? People called you and said, "You, I know you publish conservatives, but you better not sign this guy because I know they'll come for you, Tom, and they'll say, Holly will come and he'll ask for safe harbor from you. You better not give it." Did that happen in effect?
Yes. Well, we started getting inquiries immediately about whether we would take Holly's book. And, I mean, that's a natural question.
Sure.
Holly had just been canceled. We're the leading conservative publisher, so, you know. But I started getting questions about other people, too, particularly our outgoing glorious leader. And which was, I kind of had to laugh because, President Trump hasn't called me yet, begging me to publish his memoirs or whatever it is. Although we have published a book in years past by Donald Trump when he was just Private Citizen Trump, and I was asked, would we, take that out of print, or would we reprint it when it runs out or whatever? And then I did get calls, inquiries from others in publishing, in conservative publishing, who are nervous. We're not headed for the hills, but there are, as I said in that op-ed, there are a lot of points of vulnerability where we could certainly suffer the same fate as Parler. Our books are distributed by somebody else. That is, they're warehoused, shipped, the orders filled, all of that. Obviously, Amazon could decide not to sell some or all of our books. That hasn't happened. No, I'm not suggesting that someone from Amazon is threatening us or anything like that. But when you see what happened so fast to so many people right after that, the terrible thing that happened at the Capitol on the 6th of January, you start to, watch your back. And there are a lot of people in publishing that are watching their backs.
Tom, can you tell us, you've been in publishing a long time, the players mm-hmm. and the people that make these decisions. Is this a principled decision by a company like Simon & Schuster? I mean, they're kind of known as one of the biggies in publishing. Is this principled? Is this purely the politics, the fevered pitch politics of the moment? What's it driven by? Why do they make a decision like this, truly, sincerely?
To tell you the truth, Chris, I don't know. I don't know who made that decision. I don't know the facts about the interior workings at Simon & Schuster, although, well, I've heard a little bit recently. But that never stops me from offering an opinion, so I can my guess, which is I am guessing that was a, fairly cynical business decision. One thing that these a place like Simon & Schuster or any other company has to contend with is a younger generation of employees that are as woke as all get out.
Yes.
And it's not only in universities or publishing or other kind of commonly liberal places. It's everywhere. And they are vocal and can be pretty ferocious. And a lot of companies are terrified of them. So, and this has happened in some high-profile cases in publishing the last few years. My guess is that they were worried about internal dissent, and just thought this was a problem that was not worth dealing with. And no, I'm sure they didn't want to cancel the book and have the publicity and all of that, but decided that it was easier to do that than to have a revolt on their hands.
Tom, has Senator Hawley finished the book, or was it just the concept is on the table?
Yeah, no, it's done. It's done, and the great thing about picking up a book that's been canceled is somebody's done a lot of the work already.
So, here's what I wonder. Like, you guys have picked up a book at a time when now, my gosh, assuming Amazon and other distributors don't shut it down, what a ad blitz. This thing has probably sold Regnery more books than you could ever have hoped for.
But, yeah, Simon & Schuster did the best PR campaign for it that we could have had.
Coming up,
a rise of political extremism, white supremacy, domestic terrorism, that we must confront and we will defeat.
The final segment of the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt when we return. If you enjoy the Town Hall Review and you are a person of faith, let me introduce you to another podcast I think you'll like. It's the Christian Outlook, and in it you'll hear the leading voices in the Christian world engaging the issue of the day. This week, Joe Biden is sworn in as the 46th President of the United States of America.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr. President.
They look at his call to unity.
I ask every American to join me in this cause.
And the ongoing pageant of democracy.
Music actually plays a very important role in most presidential inaugurations where there is a transfer of power.
Jim Daly, a focus on the family, prays.
Be with this nation. Help us, Lord, to turn toward you.
And direction for what's ahead.
I think we've got to focus on giving voice to our faith leaders.
We've got all this and more. To subscribe, go to ChristianOutlook.com. That's ChristianOutlook.com. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. A week before the inauguration, there was chaos at the Capitol. But this week, a peaceful transfer of power was a comfort and an assurance. America remains strong. Democracy is still alive and well in the United States. President Biden expressed a desire to be a president for all people. But there is still much to be concerned with as progressives look to shape the coming agenda. Here's my friend and colleague, Dennis Prager.
When you speak in an inaugural address, first time in the history of the United States that domestic terrorism and white supremacy were mentioned in an inaugural address. You can't unify the country without truth. The truth is that we have far more to fear from left-wing terror than right-wing terror. The ratio is about 1,000 to 1. So you can't say you're committed to truth if you don't acknowledge that there are vast numbers of people who hate this country, who have dominated our society, who have taken over public spaces, destroyed,
1,000 businesses, torch them, vast amount of looting, looting defended on national public radio. This country does not suffer from white supremacy. That's, you can't call for truth and unity and say we have to fight white supremacy or that the country is systemically racist. You say you love America. How do you love a place that's systemically racist? Systemically, not a country that has racists in it. Every country has racists in it. Every country has rapists in it. Every country has murderers in it. Is the country a rapist? Is the country systemically rapist? You wouldn't say that. I'm sure he wouldn't say that. There's a very big difference between a society having bad people and a society being a bad society. They are not the same things. God, if he'd have just said, more than anything else, I wish he would have said, this is the country of free speech, more than any other in the history of the world. We will not tolerate the suppression of dissent in the United States of America. Can you imagine that? That, my friends, would have won me over with anything else he wanted to say. We cannot tolerate the suppression of free speech in the land of the free and the home of the brave.
Thanks for joining us for Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Catch up on earlier episodes at our website, townhallreview.com, and sign up for a daily dose of the best in talk radio. Special thanks to executive producer Russell Shubin, producer Charlie Richards, David Pochon, Michael Cook, Alex Perez, Adam Ramsey, Harley Idy, Ben Bergman, and Dwayne Patterson. Let me say thanks once again to our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for joining us.